number one overall draft pick in 1984. That's right. You know how long ago that was? That was 39 years ago. That was 39 years ago.
Thank you for telling them how old I am.
You know how old I am? I'm 39 years old. So the man was the number one overall draft pick, okay, by the Miami Dolphins back then.
It was the Patriots back then.
You know, so I'm not sure who the quarterback was for the Patriots at that time. But the fact is that this man is sitting right here next to me. And not only that, I went to high school with his son as well, too. We played ball together. He actually coached the team as well. So listen, everybody, without further ado, I have the one, the only, Mr. Dr. Urban Fryer in the Unshakable Podcast. Let's go.
Nice to be here, man.
Brother, thank you for doing this, man.
I've been looking forward to this.
Yes.
I was a little bit intimidated. You know, I've watched you and listened to you, and you're all over the world.
Yeah.
And I'm like, look at Kenny.
Yeah.
He's killing it.
Yeah.
And I'm just impressed and honored to be here, brother.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
We about to shake it up. Somebody going to be shaking, and they going to be unshakable by the end of this conversation.
Yes,
now,
yes,
we're going to get into a lot of stuff. But I want to go back. I want to go back to, you know, that number one overall draft pick. You know, obviously a young man coming out of college, going into the pros. And, you know, what was the mindset like, you know, but like before then, what was the hardships that you had to endure to get to that level?
Well, first of all, I was stupid back then. Okay, imagine this.
Okay.
A young man, 21 years old, black kid.
Yep.
21 years old, given a substantial amount of money back then.
Yeah.
Nothing compared to what they're making now, but a substantial amount of money. No direction. No guidance. No discipline. No accountability. Yeah. Doing drugs, running the streets, chasing women.
Wow.
And,
Yeah.
It was like throwing gasoline on a fire for me.
Jesus, yeah.
Yeah, no, and it was amazing because even the people around me, particularly my family, that I started taking care of at the time, was taking care of everybody. You know, my mom, dad bought them a house, bought everybody cars and all that. Some of the crazy stuff I was doing, they never really brought correction.
Correction.
They never tried to pull the reins back. Nobody ever checked me that was close to me. I guess because I had made it to the next level. I had made it to a level that no one had in my family had ever made it to.
Yep.
And had this money now.
Yep.
And I guess they just assumed that I knew what I was doing.
Right.
But I had no clue. Right. I had no clue. I was so silly and so immature at the time. Mm-hmm. I literally, if I can say this, I literally said to myself when I got that first check, they done gave some money to the wrong Negro.
Yeah.
Because like, I had no good intentions at all.
No good intentions. Yeah.
They didn't have some of the programs that they have now in terms of guiding you and educating you and preparing you for that kind of platform.
Absolutely.
And the responsibilities to come along with that kind of platform. It just didn't exist back then. You just were
get
on
the
your
money
own.
And go.
And I had no one who had ever been there before. Okay. I had no friends. And then even the person that I semi-trusted, I can't mention his name because the whole scenario that took place, I signed a gag clause, I can't say anything.
Okay.
The one I trusted to help manage my money, he stole money from me.
Wow.
So it was, it was a long period of time, Kenny, before I actually gained some knowledge and awareness of what I was in was all about.
Absolutely.
The responsibilities that came along with it.
Yeah.
And you know, by then, you know, a lot had been lost.
Yep.
Some damage had been done.
Yep.
Because I made some mistakes that I carried myself as that Irving Fryer who grew up in Mount Holly, New Jersey, unaware of the fact that there were people who were watching. I was on a platform that was influential, particularly to young people. And I just carried myself as that same old guy and did the same old things.
The same old things. So you mentioned that, you know, you started taking care of your family at, you know, 21 years old. That's pretty young to be taking care of your whole family as well, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And many people do it to this day. And they didn't correct you, didn't say anything. You know, could it have been because of, hey, we were all just in a gutter. You know what I'm saying? And we ain't trying to go back.
Yeah.
You know, so if you were to speak to your 21-year-old self today, right? What would you have said to yourself back then?
I would say something simple like this, and I didn't learn this. Here's an eye opener.
Okay.
What I'm getting ready to say, I didn't learn until after I retired.
Wow.
I was retired. I was in a forum that the NFL, at the time I was working with the NFL as a transitional coach, helping college athletes come into the pros that transition and helping former players transition into what they call the real world now, mm-hmm. Out of football. So I was at this forum, this seminar that was being done by the NFL. And they had some former NFL players there who were current business men. And this one guy stood up, and this is what I would tell Irving at 21 years old.
Yep.
Because nobody ever told me this.
Yeah.
And a lot of us don't even have access to this kind of information, which is really, really crazy. Mm-hmm. As a rookie in the NFL, his father told him, listen, you're going to sign a rookie year deal.
Okay.
Buy what you need with that first contract.
Okay.
Or at first, buy your house, buy your car, you know, however you want to live, set that up.
Set that up.
Whatever it costs you to maintain that, to live that way for the rest of your life, that's how much money you need to save. Mm-hmm. All right? Mm-hmm. Save that amount of money so that it creates the interest or whatever it does for you, the income that you need to maintain that style of living. Mm-hmm. And you know you have that, and you can do that for the rest of your life.
Wow.
Then any money over and above that, you can take chances with. You can invest.
Right.
You can be stupid with if you want to.
Right.
But at least you know you can live like this for the rest of your life. Why? Because you have that money set aside.
Mm.
That's a simple financial security plan.
Right.
That I never even thought about. Right. No one ever told me that I could have very easily done.
Absolutely. You know what's crazy? One of my good friends, he tells me all the time, he says, Kenny, what gets measured gets managed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What gets measured gets managed.
Yes, that's nice.
And what you're saying to me is that we have technology. We have all these other programs or things in the TikToks and the Instagrams that people have access to.
Right.
You can get access to drugs. You can get access to women. You can get access to all these other things. Mm-hmm. But you can't get access to what you're saying, right, to the financial literacy that we need if you're going to another level in sports.
Right.
Right?
Right.
That's a huge problem right there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So how do we rectify something like that? You know, what are some of the things that we have to do inside of our own communities in order to kind of fix that?
Well, we have to educate our people.
Right.
We have to educate our people with people who are the educators in that field.
Right.
I'm not financially literate. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I ended up in prison a few years back
because
of my financial, you know, stupidity.
Right.
But we have to see, the problem is with many of us is this, again, when I lost that money,
that's right.
The guy who stole it,
right?
He wasn't a black man,
right?
He's a white man.
Wow.
And we'll trust a white man,
yeah,
before we trust one another.
Mm.
That's the problem with the black community.
Right.
We won't come together and suffice for one another.
One another.
Look out for one another.
Right.
Bring change in one another's life and help us as a people, a culture, go to the next level.
That's right.
Because we don't trust one another.
Right.
I remember when I was playing with the Dolphins.
Yeah.
I had a white guy,
uh-huh,
big business, who wanted to help make change in our communities. But all he wanted was two or three of us to give the cosign with our names.
Wow.
To put our names on it. So I went to a couple of players. Now, all of us had money at the time. Wasn't going to cost us anything. Just our face. Just our blessing. To agree with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And because, I don't know why, but the guys wouldn't do it. Nobody would come together. Everybody was kind of doing their own thing.
Yeah.
And we have that today in the world. You got some big movers and shakers and shot callers and big ballers who are black people.
Right.
You know, the Michael Jordans of the world, the Oprah Winfreys of the world, the Magic Johnsons of the world, the Tiger Woods of the world.
Yeah.
What do you think would happen if they came together?
Came together. Wow.
And did something to bring change in the black community.
Right.
First of all, it wouldn't cost any of them a dime.
Right.
Because who doesn't answer Oprah Winfrey's call?
Yeah.
Who doesn't answer Michael Jordan's call?
Right.
Who doesn't answer Tiger Woods' call?
Yeah.
But they're all doing something.
Right.
but they're not separately. Doing it together.
Right. Wow.
They're not doing it together. So if they would come together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, what
imagine
what,
kind of, what we could imagine what we could do.
Imagine what kind of change, man.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm just a little peon. I need a whole lot of folk to come together.
With me, absolutely. Yeah.
But those cats right there, man, they can bring change.
Absolutely.
In a lot. Now, again, yeah, we can't be silly because, you know, a lot of times you'll see black folk mm-hmm. will come into a community that's been newly built and 10 years later it's a ghetto.
Yeah. Right.
Because we haven't taken care of it. We've just, you know, abused it and misused the goodness of the opportunity to better ourselves.
Let's talk about that because I really feel like that's important. Like I grew up, you know, I was born in Newark and then we moved down to South Jersey when I was like 5-6 years old and we moved into Willingboro.
Mm-hmm.
And when we moved to Willingboro, it was mixed cultures there. Now it's predominantly black,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But and now it doesn't look anything like
nope.
What my parents moved me into, right? And it's just like, man, like it's crazy how, you know, we can grab something, we have this opportunity, and then we don't take care of it. And when we don't take care of it, then we're deemed as oh, there go the ghetto cats, or there they go.
But do we know how to take care?
Do we know how?
That's the question.
That's a good question.
Do you know how? Mm-hmm. Have our elders, have our parents taught us how? Did they know how?
Right.
You know, for a long time, man, I got a little educated, I got a little older,
right.
And I realized, you know, I got saved, got in the Bible,
yeah.
And I realized what family is supposed to be all about, what manhood, the model of manhood really is.
Yep.
And, you know, for a while there, I got mad at my father.
Really?
I was mad at my father for a long time because my father, he emotionally, psychologically, that physical thing that we need, he wasn't about that. He just,
really?
He wasn't. He went to work. I mean, my father lived in the same house that I did, but I rarely saw him.
Wow.
I might see him out of a week. I might see him maybe 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
And it was a passing kind of thing.
Mm.
But he worked all the time. He worked two jobs, fourth grade education.
Right.
His father, my grandfather, went and got my father out of school in the fourth grade and took him to the field to work in the field as a sharecropper because he needed him to work in the field.
Wow.
So my father's education was only a fourth grade education.
Wow.
But then I came to realize my father owned two cleaners and worked in the foundry for 25 years.
Come on.
And a fourth grade education, my father was a genius.
Yeah.
But I was mad at him for a long time
because
of my struggle with trying to become a man.
A man.
In those areas that he did not necessarily even know about.
Wow. Yeah.
And when I found out about it and saw that I was screwed up, I got mad at him. It wasn't his fault.
It wasn't his fault.
He did the best he could with what he had.
Right. Right.
But again, is that passed on? How do we pass that on? When we become aware of certain things that will lift us as people and lift us as a culture, how do we pass that on?
Right.
And will you be receptive to that?
Come on.
We got a whole generation, y'all's generation.
Yep.
It's y'all.
It's y'all's
generation.
Right.
That, man, y'all don't want to hear nothing.
Right, right.
I don't even know how to communicate sometimes with my own kids.
Right.
Because it's almost like we're oil and water sometimes.
Yeah.
It just...
It's wild because... You say our generation.
Y'all.
I'm going to sit there and say this, right? I'm going to sit there and say this. Them. Because I'm listening, right?
Uh-huh.
Because I'm joking, but like, I understand.
You're among the few.
Right, that 1% right there. Like, I'm trying to
you're
be in that, one, that 1%.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, it you're right, though, because when I talk to my own kids today, I'm like, yo, do you hear what I'm saying? Do you hear what I'm saying?
You got a different problem. You got a different issue. Yeah.
Like, and it's like my wife and I, we're saying the same thing like probably 20 times. You know, did you do this? Did you do that? And they're saying, yeah, and it ain't done. But that it translates into other things that are more important.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, how do you even begin to break that particular mold? Because now we're in a world where you can't say this or you can't do that, right?
Well, see that, we've given the power,
right.
And when I say we, it wasn't me,
right.
Because I disagree with it, but the power has been given to the kids. And that's not, my father used to say, hear me. That's how he said, hear me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was, yes, dad.
Yep.
Yes, daddy, yeah.
Yeah.
And like you said, you're asking your son, do you hear me?
Yes.
Do you hear me? And you're asking over and over again.
Yeah.
The power has been given to the youth. And it's just, I mean, it's taken what we need and the ability that we used to have as parents away from us to train and raise our kids, pour into our kids, because they don't have to listen.
Yeah.
It's almost like they have, it's an option.
It's an option, right.
Whether to be obedient or not, whether to be respectful or not, mm-hmm. whether to listen or not.
Yeah.
It's like an option.
I think what also makes it harder, too, is that, like, for example, like what we do in our house, my children have, you know, a limited time on the video games,
mm-hmm.
right? And their friends, they don't have a limited time on the video games.
No.
So then it becomes like,
there's
well,
a battle between you and their
me
peers.
And other parents.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm like, listen, like how they do their thing, they ain't got nothing to do with me. But as for me and my house,
right,
you know what I'm saying?
Right,
you
right,
already know. Like, right. I'm training you this way. This is mm-hmm. how we do it. You can be combative about it all you want, but the reality is that you're gonna have to follow these rules because this is how I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get on a video game like every single day, nor did I have a phone.
Right.
You know, at the time either. You know? So, you know, let's transition a little bit into fatherhood. You became a father, you know,
London.
He's the oldest.
Yes.
Right?
Yes,
wow.
Yes. And I was 22 at the time. And I think that really, if nothing else, because again, I didn't have necessarily a mentor. I didn't have any accountability with anybody, particularly when I first got married. I didn't get saved until I was 27 years old. So I was several years into the marriage and fatherhood and playing in the NFL before I even got around some people and hung around people that had some sense and faith and awareness of what is right and what is wrong. So it took me a minute. But as a new father, man, it kind of gave me responsibility now.
Yeah.
And I knew, at least based on what my father did, you know, because we never wanted for anything. We didn't have everything, but we had food, we had clothes on our back, roof over our head, transportation. My father provided all of that. There was nothing that I lacked. You know, I didn't have an abundance of anything, but there was nothing that I lacked.
Right.
And I knew, at least based on how my father handled himself, that I needed to take care of my kids.
Yeah.
So it did settle me down a little bit because I had those responsibilities. I have not the same kind of story as you, but a similar story.
Yep.
When our third child was born, Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian is, I think she's 31, 32 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
When she was born with a heart defect. It's called tetralogy of Fallot with an absent pulmonary valve.
Really?
Meaning her pulmonary arteries, which are your main arteries, they weren't connected to her heart.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
They weren't connected to her heart. And she had a couple of holes in her arteries.
Okay.
Okay. So similar story to you.
Yep.
So when she was born in Rhode Island. We took her down to Rhode Island. And they said she had a heart murmur.
Mm.
And so that was cool. It was like, okay, no big problem. Just a heart murmur. Take her home. We'll schedule you to go to CHOP in Boston a month from now.
Mm-hmm.
So we got her home. No problems. Nothing happened. She didn't get sick or anything. A month later, we go to CHOP. And, excuse me, for her checkup. It's supposed to be a checkup.
Yep.
We go to CHOP. Doctors come back out and say, she got to have surgery right now.
Right now.
Similar like, to
immediately.
Story.
Yeah,
immediately.
Yeah, because like, I know that
what?
Feeling. Yeah.
What do you mean?
Right.
This is what she has. This is what's going on. Dr. Aldo Castaneda, I'll never forget him. He comes in with a piece of paper. He starts drawing this. He said, this is what we got to do, and this is what we got to do. But don't worry about it. I can do that. This is what we got to do, and this is what we got to do.
Ain't that good?
But don't worry about it. I can do that.
Ooh.
Listen, it was crazy.
Yeah.
So they had her in the hospital, and we had to stay in the hospital the next, I want to say 3 months every day. But before they could do the surgery, we found out, and this was by accident. It was my ex-wife, Adrian's mama.
Yep.
We were preparing ourselves for the surgery the next day.
Uh-huh.
So I had gone back to the house to get what we needed to stay for the next few days or whatever, however long we needed to prepare for. And Jackie was changing Adrian's diaper, and there was blood in her stool.
Mm.
And she called the nurse and showed the nurse. So when they found the blood in the stool, which had never happened before,
right.
Come to find out, a piece of her bowel, because of her heart condition, had diminished
and
died. So prior to the operation, they had to go in and cut that piece of bowel out, and she had to have that bag on the outside for a month before they could do the surgery. Now, had they gone in and not and done the surgery without us discovering that in her bowel, she would have died.
What?
She would have died.
That's crazy.
So Adrienne is, she is a miracle.
Yeah.
She's one of the few at that time who lived with that kind of heart defect and made it to, when she got to 21, it was like, she's in the books.
She's in the books, right.
She's had multiple heart surgeries where they cracked her sternum open because they connected the pulmonary artery. They patched up the holes. Mm-hmm. Over the years, they've had to increase those arteries, you know, open them up, allow more blood flow with stents. But over the years, when they kept cracking her sternum open, it's common for kids to develop scoliosis. So she has scoliosis with a severe curve. When she was about, I think she had that surgery when she was about maybe 11. Mm. No, she's 12, 13 years old when she had that surgery. And they said they were only going to be able to straighten it out to a certain degree, that it would be, you know, she would still have, she had a significant curve and she, you could see it just looking at her. But man, they were able to straighten it out to almost normal. Yeah.
Wow.
She has less of a curve than most people in the world.
Ain't that something?
Yeah.
Ain't God
so,
something?
Yeah, she's a blessed baby. Wow. And then come to find out, this is a blessing.
Yeah.
We're here in Jersey. Deborah Hospital, the heart hospital in Browns Mills, has a connection with the NFL.
Mm.
So because of their connection with the NFL, she gets free treatment.
She
gets
free.
For
come on now.
Life.
Won't he do it?
Yes, he
won't
will.
He do it? Come on
yes,
now.
Yes, he will. Yes,
come
he
on
will.
Now. Man, I need some sound effects over here,
like,
man.
I'm like, you're blessed. Oh, I'll take you a step further than that. When we finally moved back here, I can't remember the doctor's name, but I know Aldo Castaneda was a head guy. And when we were chopped in Boston's CHOP was the number one children's hospital in the country, in the world at that time.
Right.
There was a doctor, I can't remember his name, but he assisted Aldo Castaneda. Aldo Castaneda retired maybe a couple of years after he did the surgery on Adrienne.
Okay.
So at that time, we're in Boston. I end up going to Miami. I'm playing for Miami. Then I come back here to Philly. So now we're in this area.
Right.
Not in Miami anymore. We're in this area. Right. Anytime she needed checkups, we'd go to Boston. Now we go to CHOP over in Philadelphia.
Right.
The doctor who assisted Aldo Castaneda is the head physician at CHOP.
Come on now.
So
come on,
he
man.
He knew her whole case.
Had the whole plan. The roadmap is right there.
I'm like, girl, you blessed.
Wow.
You blessed.
You mentioned at 27 you got saved, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was it like, you know, what was life like before you got saved? Like, what was the breaking point where you said, you know what, I have to do this? Like,
Adrienne. It was Adrienne. Mm. It was Adrienne. When Adrienne was born. And, you know, the Lord had been, I was raised in the church.
Right.
So, you know, we go out, I rebelled, because that's all I did was church until I got, you know, until I got old enough to go to college, graduated from high school, went to college. So now I'm not going to church.
Right.
Because that's all we did.
I'm
free. I don't have to police myself. I'm going out and doing my thing. But the whole time, the Holy Spirit, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart.
Yeah.
The whole time, the Holy Spirit's tugging on. I can remember times, man, being high, freebasing.
Wow.
And telling the people that I was with, freebasing, I'm not supposed to be doing this. Just messing up everybody's high. I'm not supposed to be doing this.
Wow.
I'm supposed to be preaching.
Yeah.
Telling people while I was high.
Wow.
The Holy Spirit tugging at me.
Come on.
While I was high. Now, people might say, no, you was high. No, it was the Holy Spirit tugging at me while I was high.
Wow.
Messing up my high,
messing
man.
It up. messing it up.
He messed up my high.
Messing it all
so,
up.
So Adrienne, when she was born, I fell on my knees because at that time I wasn't a person necessarily of faith, so I didn't know what was going to happen.
Mm.
I'm like, my child is going to die.
Yeah.
And it's my fault.
It's your fault, right?
Because I'm a heathen.
Wow.
I'm a sinner.
Wow.
I'm just crazy.
Wow.
And I said, Lord, if you save her, I won't turn back.
Come on.
I'll commit to you and I won't turn back. And that's what happened.
Wow.
That's what happened.
That's beautiful. Yeah. You know, it reminds me a little bit of the story of Hezekiah in a sense, right? Mm-hmm. King Hezekiah, you know, he had to get his house in order, right? His sons was tripping.
Yeah.
But, you know, he had to get his house in order. But he turned to that wall and he said, God, the dead can't praise you. You know, and that reminds me a little bit of like, hey, you got this issue going on. Like, drop to your knees now and give yourself up. So for anyone that's out there, like, listen, you can only run from God for so long until he's ready to say, okay, enough is enough, because we're on the timeline here. And you're going to do what it is that I'm calling you to do, right? And you're calling to go out and preach the gospel. Not only that, but, you know, be who you are. Like, although all those things are great, you went down, you know, another road with, you know, the situation that you had going into prison, right? And, you know, tell us a little bit about, you know, how that transpired. You said that earlier the financial literacy and things of that nature, you know, got you in trouble. So, like, take us through that, and what was the mindset that you had going in? Like, you got to do this time now. So it's like, yo, hold up. You go from number one overall draft pick, right? Yeah. Playing in the NFL. You know what we do? 17 years in the league.
We do 17 years in the league.
Yeah. You know, houses, cars. You know, church, all of that, right? Preaching.
Yeah, man.
And then we go down into where now you got to go into prison. Now we was just at the peak. Now we got to go down into the valley.
I'm the best and the worst of the NFL.
Talk about it.
The best. I'm the dream and the nightmare.
Come on.
In terms of the NFL.
Yeah.
The dream. Okay, I'm drafted number one pick. Been to a Super Bowl.
Right.
Pro Bowls. Played 17 years. You know, honors and things like that. And then the one who ends up in prison with nothing.
Nothing.
That's the dream and the nightmare.
Wow.
But there's always the comeback. You know,
there's always the comeback.
I think LL said,
"That's right.
Don't call it a comeback.
I've been here for years. Yeah, let's go. Yeah.
But yeah, my financial illiteracy led to my incarceration. Mm. One, because I allowed someone who I thought at the time, and this is, you got to be careful. You really do. You got to vet people. This is a guy who's my fraternity brother, a friend of mine that I've known for years, that I've done business with, who ended up doing some fraudulent things. And because I was connected to him, long story short, the state was able to convince a jury that I had something to do with it. Or if I didn't have anything to do with it, I didn't say anything.
Mm.
And I end up getting sentenced to 5 years. I only ended up doing, actually, physically, 8 months in prison.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I came out of prison, I was on a program for 21 months called ISP, Intensive Supervision Program. Mm-hmm. It's not probation. It's almost like parole.
Mm-hmm.
But you can have a phone. I was mandated to have two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They took 20% of my check after taxes from the first job.
Wow.
And they took 100% of my check.
Man.
During the second, I did that for 21 months. So I was really in prison for 3 years.
Right.
Really. And man, when I came out, I didn't have anything.
Mm.
I really didn't have anything. Let me tell you about a story, though,
yeah,
when I went in. Because this was something that, I remember that first day in prison, man, was like, an hour took 24 hours. It's like it was 24 hours and only an hour that went by.
Right.
And I remember saying to myself, I was just sleeping in my bed.
Yeah.
Now I'm in this prison cell. And I didn't know when I was going to get out. I had no idea. My attorneys were less than adequate. I didn't know that until they actually got into the courtroom. You seen My Cousin Vinny?
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yep, attorney? Remember that movie? Yep.
It's funny to us, but that's how my attorney was.
Wow.
He was a former federal prosecutor
who
became a defendant attorney. And he was great uncovering information, so on and so forth. We get in the courtroom and he can't talk.
Wow.
I'm like, oh my God.
Oh man, you didn't set me
up. But what was going on was so obvious. I mean, we're going to do a part B.
Right.
Like, we're going to have to do a courtroom.
Yeah,
we do
absolutely.
A courtroom session. Come back and do a part two of this.
Yeah.
But I end up in prison.
Okay.
So I'm state property because it was the state that prosecuted me and persecuted
me
and convicted me. During my sentencing, the judge said, before she actually sentenced me, Mr. Fryer, and this is all facts, Mr. Fryer, I would have found you innocent. That's what she said.
Wow.
And I'm thinking to myself, if you would have found me innocent, why are you treating me like I'm guilty?
Right.
Send me to prison. I'm state property. I'm in the county for like 4 or 5 days there in Burlington County in Mount Holly.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm state property, so they got to get me out and get me to a state prison. They send me to a place called Craft. It's in Trenton. Central Relocation and Assignment Facility, CRAF. That's where I learned all this. You learn all this stuff while you're going through. Yep. That's where everybody gets, whoever gets convicted and sentenced to prison in the state of New Jersey, they got to go to CRAF first.
Okay.
And then they get reassigned to a different prison in the state. Mm-hmm. Some do stay in CRAF their whole sentence, and most get reassigned.
Mm.
So I go to CRAF, and they bring me in. They put me on this chair with not celebrities, but high guys who were cops, politicians,
high-profile
people like that. They put me on a tier with them.
Okay.
So I go on the tier, and the tier is a big door that opens up. On the left side of the tier, you got windows and bars, and you got a few tables and a couple TVs. That's where the phone is.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the right side of the tier are all the cells. All the way at the end is the shower. There's like 18 cells.
Wow.
I'm in the last cell.
The last one.
I'm carrying my stuff, and I'm going by. I got to walk through everybody.
Man.
Yeah. I'm walking through everybody. Yeah. Now, apparently, I guess some of them knew I was coming because they had come up there to examine everything.
Right.
And some of the officials. So they put me in the last cell right next to the shower by myself. I never had a cellmate.
Okay.
So I go in, and my cell door's open. I'm putting my stuff up on the bunk. As I'm putting my stuff up on the bunk, guys from the tier start walking in. They start coming in, and I'm thinking to myself, all right, I got a fight already.
Oh, man,
what are you coming in my cell for, man? Yeah. My gosh. Okay, so I turn around. I'm ready. I'm like, okay, I got to do this.
Mm.
I turn around, and cats start handing me stuff.
Mm.
Clothes.
Wow.
Underwear. When you're in prison, now, if you're there for a long period of time, they only give you like two pair of underwear, two T-shirts, one pair of pants, a pair of Bobo sneakers, one shirt. So if you're there for a significant period of time, that stuff's not going to last.
Right.
They give you jobs, and you end up spending that money to buy more underwear and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. The essentials. Right. Soap. Right. Toothpaste, toothbrush, socks. Guys start bringing stuff, food. Guys start bringing stuff in like that.
Wow.
They're giving it to me.
Wow.
What is this? Yeah. I asked one of the guys, what are you guys doing? What is this? He said, this is what we do.
Mm.
He said, everybody that comes in here is not having a good day.
Mm.
Everybody that comes in here, they have been found guilty.
Mm.
Whether they're guilty or not, they've been found guilty.
Yeah.
We're here, and this is what we do on this tier, to give you what you need so we can help you.
Wow.
And the Holy Spirit started talking to me right then. He said, that's how church folks supposed to be.
That's it.
That's how Christianity is supposed to be. I had to come to prison to meet good people?
Come on.
Really?
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean because nobody really had ever done anything for me. I was always the doer. I was always the giver. I was always the one sacrificing for other. And I don't say this in a negative way. It's just the fact.
It's just the fact.
You can ask anybody.
Right.
I was always the one sacrificing for other people. Mm-hmm. And now here are these cats, when we're all in the same boat, making sure I have what I need,
what you need,
to make the journey just a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about this, too, and I'll be done with this.
Go ahead.
There was an angel, man. You can't tell me that when God makes us the promise that he will never leave us, nor will he forsake us.
Right.
I didn't know this until later on.
Right.
A lot of times when you're in the storm,
it's
hard to hear the voice of God.
It is.
It's hard to know God's voice because the storm is making all kinds of noise.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to be able to know it's God.
Yeah.
But oftentimes God doesn't speak in the storm.
That's right.
God shows us in the storm.
Come on.
He'll make things available for us in an ocular demonstration during the storm because we can't hear him.
Right.
We can't hear him. So much is going on when we're in a storm. So when that first day when I was sentenced, they take me downstairs, do whatever they had to do. They take me to this room. I guess it's the intake area where anybody who was arrested that day.
Mm-hmm.
And in that room, it's a big room. They got bunks in a common area, but then they have along the one of the walls, they have individual cells, one person cells.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I would have to go back, like when I went back for the divorce,
I
came from the state prison, came back to the county for the divorce, they put me in one of those individual cells. Wow. So now I'm in one of those individual cells. They didn't put me in the common area with everybody else, but in the common area where everybody who got arrested for whatever that day, waiting to get processed the next day, they're all out there. There's a shower out there, but there's a bunch of bunks. It's probably 20, maybe 30 people out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in my cell, I'm trying to deal with, you know, the fact that I'm in here now. And I don't know how it happened, but there's a little window mm-hmm. on the door so I could see out. And you could see a little bit through one of the cracks where the door came together, where right. the hinges were.
Right.
A white guy came to the door mm-hmm. and started talking to me. Mm. I don't know his name.
Yeah.
I don't remember to this day.
To this day, yeah.
He asked me, said, first time in, right? I said, yeah. And I don't even know why I went up to the door and started talking to him.
Right.
Because I was distraught, bro.
Yeah, of course.
First time in, right? Didn't ask me what I did. Said, you never been convicted before? Never been in prison before? I said, no. He said, okay, this is what's going to happen. They're going to do this. When they do that, this is what you do. Mm-hmm. They're probably going to send you to Jones Farm, mm-hmm. all right? When you go to Jones Farm, they're going to evaluate you. They're yeah. going to process you. You're going to go before the board. When you go before the board, you tell the board, I mean, when you go to Kraft, you tell the board you want to go to Jones Farm. Mm. When you go to Jones Farm, they'll send you to Jones Farm. Don't worry about it. When you go to Jones Farm, just mind your business. You'll be all right. Stay to yourself, but you'll be fine. And it's a better place. You want to go to this building at Jones Farm. You're probably going to be in this amount of time. Mm-hmm. But this is what's going to happen. Mm. Now, mind you, the whole time I was in, whether it was on the tier and Kraft with the high-profile yep. guys, they were telling me don't go to Kraft. Mm. They were saying this is going to happen. That's going to happen. You're going to be in this long. People were always trying to tell me what was going to happen. Yep. What that guy told me, mm-hmm. I did what he said, mm-hmm. and everything happened that he said was going to happen wow. from the beginning to the end.
Come on now.
He was, I don't know who that cat was.
Yeah.
Don't know what his name was. Mm. He was my angel.
Yeah.
He gave me direction and told me what to do. And I did what he did.
Yeah.
What he said.
Right.
And everything turned out. Exactly. I'm talking about exactly.
To the T. That's crazy.
God sent an angel
yeah.
for me.
Yeah.
Because I was lost.
Absolutely.
I was lost yeah. in my spirit, mm-hmm. my faith. Was holding on, mm-hmm. but I was still lost.
Right.
And I didn't know what to do.
Wow.
I didn't know how long I was going to be in there.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Mm. And that was the only, I had other cats in my ear, but I remember what he said.
Yeah.
And for some reason in my spirit, I kept doing what he said and it worked out.
Right.
It worked out.
Yeah. I think that right there, like that discernment that you had from the other individuals, it sounded like a little confusion going on, and God was speaking very clear.
Right. Well, he only spoke one time.
That's what I'm saying.
All the other confusion came later on.
Came later on. Yeah, right, yeah. Right.
That resonated in my spirit.
Right.
Right there.
Right there.
Because it was a quiet moment. There mm. wasn't anybody else around. It was just me and him. And mm. that's what he said. And every time I got ready to make a move,
yeah.
I remember what he said.
Right.
No, he said do this.
Right, right. And just kept going. So you get out. You get out of prison. And you're starting from scratch. You're starting from the bottom, right? Yeah. Like, you literally have to start all the way over.
I was divorced. My wife at the time, of 28 years, finalized. Well, she divorced me when I got in. I got the divorce papers when I got indicted.
Wow.
When I was indicted, the trial and stuff wasn't until a year later. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she purposefully waited until I was in prison mm-hmm. to finalize the divorce.
Mm-hmm. Was it stuff that was prior to
what
for
mean?
The divorce, like, you know, you guys were going through stuff prior to the divorce,
I mean,
or was it because
just,
of?
I think we were just going in. I don't.
Yeah.
To this day, I don't. She yeah. she said the paperwork says irreconcilable differences. Mm. That's her reason for divorcing me.
Right.
I mean, did we have a perfect marriage? No.
Of course not.
But we weren't arguing. We weren't at one another's necks.
Yeah.
We weren't in agreement necessarily.
Right.
And things weren't. A bed of roses,
right?
You know, but for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, for sickness and health.
Right, right.
So when I got indicted, she filed for divorce. Mm-hmm. When that happened, yeah, I got emotional and I left the house. Mm. Got an apartment and stayed in my apartment.
Yeah.
But the divorce wasn't finalized until I was in prison.
Right.
When I got out of prison, no house, no car, no money, no nothing. No friends either.
Wow.
That was the hardest. For me,
yeah,
and it took me years, literally,
yeah,
literally years mm. to get over this.
Yeah,
the fact that all of these people in my life that meant something to me, mm. I didn't mean nothing to them.
Wow.
It took me a, man, I almost, I was on the edge, bro.
Yeah, bro.
I almost went back to prison.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I almost did some stupid stuff.
Wow.
Because I was emotional. I was heartbroken. I didn't have nothing.
Have nothing. You know, nobody.
I'm like, I'm 53 years old coming out of prison. How in the world I'm going to start all over again? I got a PhD. Who's going to pay me?
Wow.
I went and got a job at a church in Sicklerville. I brought home $450 a week.
Wow.
That's what I brought home 7 years ago.
Yeah.
6 years ago.
Wow.
And God, listen to me. My bills didn't stop.
Right.
I still had bills. I was still taking care of my mom. I was still taking care of, I still had bills.
Right.
My bills were way above my income.
Right.
Bro, I don't know how. He took those two fish and five loaves of bread.
Right, right.
And fed 5,000 people.
Yeah.
That's what he did in my life.
Yeah.
God, I don't know how he divided it and multiplied it, but I never was late on my rent.
Wow.
I wasn't.
So to the message to somebody that's having to start over right now, you know, where you started from nothing, $450 a week.
Literally nothing. People think that I'm joking when I say nothing.
Right.
No, literally nothing.
Yeah.
You know, I had some pension coming in.
Right.
But my former wife got half of that.
Right.
So what I got didn't even pay my rent.
Didn't even pay the rent.
Yeah. I gotta eat. Right. I gotta have transportation. Yeah. I gotta have clothes.
Got other stuff, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So what's the message to those people that right now that are scratching the clock? Because let me tell you something. My DM sometimes is filled up with people that saying, Kenny, how do I do this and how do I do that? And this and the third. I'm like, listen, I got five kids.
I got my own issues.
You know what I'm saying? I got five kids. Yeah, and I get it and I understand. But what I don't want you to do is to live for my Instagram posts. I don't want you to live for my YouTube videos and stuff. I want you to take the knowledge that we're projecting and start applying it, right? So I get flooded with people all the time that's asking me or whatever for stuff, and I don't mind. But maybe if it comes from someone else or whatever right now, you know what I'm saying? Like, what do you do? Because now, I got the proof in the pudding and everything is right here. So there's no excuse. Once you watch this video, I don't want to hear nothing. Don't be in the DMs.
Don't excommunicate the people.
Don't do that. I'm telling you right now. I'm being very stern right now because I love y'all. This is all tough love. But go ahead, Irv.
I think the number one thing is you can't quit.
You can't quit.
You can't give up. You have to maintain your faith in who you are. Bet on yourself.
Yeah.
God has given us, all of us, are very special, never to be repeated, miracles of human personality.
Come on.
Very special, never to be repeated, miracles of human personality. And God has endowed in each and every one of us and invested in each and every one of us a gift or talent that we can use to make a living for ourselves and those around us.
Right.
But what you cannot do, first of all, you can't end up trying to be like somebody else.
That's right.
You got to be you. We're valuable. We're valuable originals. Most of us, we're all valuable originals when we're born, but a lot of us end up cheap copies.
Yeah.
We die cheap copies. Why? Because we're always trying to be like somebody else.
Like somebody
be
else.
You. Bet on you. But you cannot ever give up. I look at it like this. Jesus told Peter, Simon, Simon, Satan desires to have you, to sift you as wheat. But I pray for you that your faith will fail not. Watch this. Simon, Simon, Satan desires to have you to sift you as wheat. He got Judas already. Looks like he's getting ready to get you. He's trying to sift you as wheat, separate you from God, separate you from your support system, separate you, isolate you like wheat gets separated from the chaff. But I pray for you, not that you wouldn't fail, but that when you do fail, your faith doesn't fail. Mm-hmm. So we're all going to make mistakes. Yeah. We're all going to end up in bad situations. We're all going to end up in circumstances that don't look good, don't feel good, and are going to be tough. But that's when you got to keep your foot. We're all going to fail. We're all going to fall. We're all going to go down. We're all going to have challenges. But you cannot give up. You have to keep the faith. And that's the only thing. Mm-hmm. That is the only thing. No body, no thing, no money, no car, no... That's the only thing, that's the only reason I'm here right now is because of my faith in God. Yes, doors are starting to open for me. Thank God. Yes, things are starting to get better for me. Mm-hmm. just a couple of years ago, I had to eat everything I killed. Everything I killed. Sometimes everything. I ain't have nothing to eat.
Right.
But now things are starting to open up a little bit.
That's right.
But it's been 7 years.
7 years. Wow.
It's been a seven-year battle, yeah. Yeah. 7-year fight. Mm. And it's not even just that fight of faith against the obstacles that come against us in the evil realm,
right.
In the spirit realm, mm-hmm. But it's been a fight against myself.
That's right. That's right. And that's the thing.
Trying to make sure I don't, you know, live based on the applause and of the people.
Yeah.
Because if you live based on the applause of the people, you're going to die on the criticism of the people.
Come on now.
So I've had to change myself completely and stop, you know, get over people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Including myself.
You know, two things come to mind real quick, and I know we're short in time here, but
we got to do part two. Yeah,
yeah, we got to do a part two, definitely. Two. Right?
We ain't coming nothing today.
Yeah, exactly. Because I got to bring him back, Matt in the back. We gonna make it happen again. All right, yeah. We gonna make it happen again because we gotta get this out.
I can come back next Friday.
Yes. So two things come to mind. John Maxwell is one of the dopest teachers that I've had the privilege of learning from. Uh-huh. And he says two things. He says, the number one, the toughest person to lead always in life is yourself. Mm-hmm. And that resonates so much with what you're saying.
Right.
Because you're going to fight yourself on so many different levels mm-hmm. all the time, mm-hmm. right? And then number two, when you got out of prison and you started from scratch, it seems to me, and what I'm learning, is that you focused on the main thing. What was the main thing to get you to where you're at right here, right now?
Right.
And I think oftentimes what we do, what we have to understand is, like, for example, it's like the 80-20 principle, mm-hmm. right? You know, 20% of salespeople make 80% of the sales in your business. You know, 20%
of... It's the 20-80 in church.
It's in church, right? It's 20-80 in church, right? 20% of the church folks pay 80%
right.
of the tithe.
Yes, sir.
Right? So it's like, if we can just focus on the main thing mm-hmm. and not get distracted right. by all right. these other things right. that we are fighting against or that's holding us back, imagine what we could be.
It's what you're talking about, and I got to go.
Yep.
But
yep.
it's the power and the peace
yes.
of living in the right now.
Yes, sir.
Let me say, because what we do is, right. and this is what I was doing,
yep.
the regrets from the past, mm-hmm. the pain from the past, mm-hmm. the disappointments from the past.
Yes, sir.
We bring all of that and we carry all of that, in the right now. Mm. We're still holding on to it in the right now.
Yes, sir.
And that disrupts our peace mm-hmm. and it eliminates our power to be able to function and be effective in the right now. Then we bring the anxiety from the future, that pressure. We bring that anxiousness into the now because we don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
But we'll carry that, and we carry all that weight in the right now, and it makes us or renders us ineffective in the right now.
Come on.
If you got a term paper you didn't do, you've been procrastinating like many of us do.
Yep.
And now it's a week. You had 3 months, but now you got a week to do it.
Yeah.
Well, being regretful and disappointed about the time you wasted in the past is not going to help you right now. Mm. It's going to discourage you if you're sitting there thinking about it mm-hmm. or being anxious about, oh, I only got a week. I don't know what's going to happen. If you're dealing with that in the right now, no, you get started, like you said, with what's most important right now. Because there's power and peace in living in the now. And all that stuff that happened in the past happened in a right now moment.
Yes.
It just happened already.
Mm.
And what's going to happen in the future, it will be a right now moment.
Yep.
It just hasn't happened yet.
Yep. Absolutely.
So you got to stay in the right now. Ooh, that's powerful.
Come on now. Like stay in the right now.
Yeah.
And listen, with that being said, Irv, we're going to have to bring you back.
Yeah, I'll come back.
We have to bring you back. Because listen, everybody, like this conversation is just getting started. We just getting started. So listen, here's what I want you guys to do. All right. If you guys have enjoyed everything that Irv has been given right now, I need y'all to go ahead and comment below. Irv, where can they find you at?
Oh, Dr. Irving Fryer on Instagram.
On Instagram.
And Irving Fryer. On Facebook.
Yep.
You can come to Dr. Irving Fryer Ministries on YouTube.
Yep.
And watch some of the sermons and some of the messages of truth and inspiration that we post every Sunday night at 7 p.m.
In the Fryer House. Don't forget about the Fryer House.
Yeah, the Fryer Place. The Fryer Place. Yeah, that's on YouTube every Friday.
Yes.
At noon. The Fryer Place, that's on YouTube as well. That's yes. Right. Thank you.
Yeah. Absolutely. That. So listen up, everybody. Check this out. This is what I want y'all to do, okay? I need y'all to go ahead and hit the share button. Hit the notification button as well, too. And share this with your mama, your daddy, your uncle, your auntie, your grandma, your grandpa, abuela, abuelo. Share with everybody, right? Because guess what? This is an unshakable conversation. This is something that you don't want to miss. I promise you, we're going to get a part two going on here, yo. Because listen. And we want you guys to be edified. We want you guys to go to that next level no matter what, all right? So with that being said, when we change the mind, yo, we change the game. Yesterday is gone. Tomorrow, worry about itself. And today is all we have. And if today is all we have, you make sure you impact today the best way you know how. Let's be unshakable today, all right? I had to shake y'all up a little bit, you know what I'm saying, to be unshakable, amen? So with that being said, for myself, Dr. Irvin Fryer, Matt in the back, all right? We're going to check y'all later. One love. Peace.
Wow.
Boom.